e bem-vindas ao Antes Tech do que Nunca, o podcast que ajuda você a lidar com a transformação digital na prática. E hoje a gente está aqui com um episódio especial direto do Expo Center Norte em São Paulo, onde está rolando o Universo TOTS 2025, uma das maiores conferências de tecnologia do país. E estou com uma convidada internacional que fez sucesso no palco na plenária principal, foi assistida aí por milhares de pessoas. Então o papo vai ser muito bacana e vai ser conduzido em inglês porque ela não fala português. Então eu tenho a honra de receber aqui a Sharon Guy, que é uma consultora especialista em inteligência artificial e tem um monte de conceito bacana aqui para discutir. Então aproveita, fica aí e acompanha esse papo. So welcome, Sharon. Super nice to have you here.
Obrigada. Es un placer.
So it's nice. It's my pleasure. It's great. So I would like to start talking about AI. Now, a lot of things in the events is covering this topic, and you probably are like all the time talking about this. But to start, what do you think like it's like hype? What is like real? And where exactly we are when we are talking about all this universe around artificial intelligence?
Yeah. I totally agree with you that, you know, a lot of it feels like hype. A lot of it somewhat is hype, but I think hype can continue to be hyped up. I actually don't think there's enough hype, especially for the general population. I think AI is something that is absolutely going to transform the way that we work, the way that we live our lives. And so really, I'm in a position to hopefully share more about what I know about AI and to disseminate that message and to have more and more people understand and know what's coming down the line.
And what do you think like is the most important thing? So share with us.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, AI can absolutely make you more productive. So this afternoon, I shared my keynote on how to do more with less. I share different frameworks of how you can approach work, looking at AI, enveloping AI into your workflow, and also a demonstration of all sorts of tools that you can use to make yourself more productive. I mean, the penetration with which people are still using AI is still very low. If we pull anybody off the street or anybody in our conference, I haven't done it, but I think if we were to do that, I don't know what percentage of people would say they are using AI in their day-to-day work or day-to-day lives. That number also looks very different country to country. You know, when you look at something that's as momentous as this, it's really important to realize that it's something that is going to change our lives profoundly.
And what is your advice? Like, how can people be using at this moment more in a practical way? Like when you say, oh, people are not using that much and you can be more productive at work. How exactly? Is
yeah.
like using ChatGPT for search, for like trying to find more content? Like what exactly?
So I think a big difference that was made in my life is when I downloaded ChatGPT on mobile, so that it was on my phone. So depending on, you know, wherever you are as a user, whether you are in Brazil or in the US or whatever country, I think for a lot of us, we looked at it from a web app perspective, and that gives you a bit more distance from you and a tool like ChatGPT. When it's in your phone and it's in your mobile phone and sort of following you around, it changes the way that you look at life and work. And it increases the amount that you use it and check on an AI system to finish something. But the framework in my keynote that I shared is, as a piece of advice, is to look at your job that we have, and we all have a job. Whether it's yourself as a podcast host, whether, you know, if you're working in marketing or sales, to advise people to take that one job and to list out all of the tasks that make up that role and to do a task organization exercise to see which tasks are very repetitive. And those are the tasks that are prone to outsource to AI. And then which sort of tasks are very creative And those are probably going to be the tasks that you're going to continue to do as a human. So you better know how to do it very well. And the competition is probably going to come from people who can do those tasks better than, can do those human tasks better than you. And to start to sort of divide up your work. I think that's sort of the way to not get replaced, because there's a lot of talk out there about job loss being replaced. The way to future-proof yourself to with to not be replaced is to do that task organization exercise and to start to replace yourself. And as long as you're proactive with replacing yourself, then you should not be replaced as easily from the company that you're working at or from your employer, because you're already doing that exercise.
And then you like take the activities, the tasks that are more repetitive and try to automatize that. Mm-hmm. How does it work? This is how we are talking about the AI agents.
Yeah. So I work a lot with e-commerce managers. And e-commerce managers, if you lay out all of their tasks, a bulk of their task is to create new product detail pages. That's a very repetitive task that they have to do. If you are working for a large retailer, sometimes you have to look at hundreds or thousands of SKUs, and everything from creating that product detail page, from doing the photos, from doing the photo shoots, original photo shoots that would create those photos, to the words that you would write for the copy that you would use for those products, to the how you measure actually the reviews of that product, are all repetitive things that you're repeating SKU after SKU. And so a really great way to sort of envelop AI in this role is, what type of tool is out there that you can outsource a lot of that work to? And then you, as an e-commerce manager, you just become a true manager, where you're managing a series of tools or agents to complete this work for you.
Oh, that's brilliant. And how can AI be used to scale business and operations? Do you know, like to have more productivity and be more scalable?
Yeah. So we used to have, you know, whether it's friends or family, they would always boast about headcount in a company, that the more number of employees they have, the bigger or better the company. I think that KPI or that metric is going to change. We're going to gradually go into this world where a new KPI is going to be revenue per head. So revenue per head that this employee is generating. So that's why this new metric of success for a lot of startups in the US is, what is the average amount of revenue that per employee is bringing in? And so if you want to increase that number, if you want to make yourself look more successful, you're going to be more careful with hiring. So the way that you scale is looking at what sort of roles can you outsource to an AI agent, whether that's in customer service or in sales or in development, where you can reduce your head, where you can reduce your headcount and increase that revenue per head number.
And how does this integration around these AI agents work, do you know?
How do you integrate with an AI agent? I mean, there's definitely two choices for a lot of companies. It's build or buy. So whether you're building your own AI agents, so some companies have very specific contextual workflows. So you can use tools like NAN to build your own series of agents that's just for you as a company. I know of a lot of even AI consulting companies that's going into this space where they are calling small, medium businesses to build a very customized agentic workflow for a small business. And then there's the buy version, where it's more built as a wrapped within a SaaS product offering, and you're just buying that tool to use. So it's a little less customized, but maybe more mass. So every company has to face the build versus buy decision. There's no sort of right answer. There's pluses and minuses to both sides, because one is going to be slower, but at the same time, it's a lot more customized. I think the right answer is probably going to be an average or a fine line between a balance between the two. I think a lot of businesses are wrapping their heads around how to make that decision.
Yeah, and then comes like the idea that you said, how AI is a good executor, so you need like to manage better. So I think like what you are saying is we should invest more in these skills of management, you know, because then we can delegate the execution. Is it right, mm-hmm. the way that you are thinking?
Yeah, I think in the future, what the so-called, you know, we in the US, for instance, we always had two types of roles. One was a manager type of role. So this manager would manage a small team. And then above him or her is VPs and SVPs that manage larger and larger teams. And then there's always that sort of career path where you're an individual contributor. So you're the person that's working on a certain task. I think in the future, everyone is going to be a manager or management. The word management or the concept of management is really going to change because we're going to see individual contributors become managers, if you will, as well, where you're not maybe managing a actual human, but you're managing an agent or of some sort, or you're managing a hybrid team where a couple of people on your team are human, and then a couple of AI or agents on your team are agentic, and you're managing sort of everyone together.
And how can we prepare, do you know, the leaders to manage these teams that are kind of hybrids and all this like new way to work?
Yeah, I think a big piece is communication. So I share that prompt, the advisable way to write a prompt, which is starting out with your goal and then giving it a lot of context, that framework that I shared. I think very few people know how to communicate to agentic AI systems right now. We are sort of using our natural language and a little ambiguous with what we want them to give us back. And so that's a skill. I guess that skill of prompting is something that everyone must learn, because there are masterful prompters out there and the output that they get is pristine. And then there are weaker prompters out there and then the output that they get is just suboptimal or it's perhaps unusable. And you really see that difference now in the workforce between people that are very good at prompting and getting something back that's very usable versus weaker prompters that's getting something back that's you would have to do it again and again. So that skill of delegation, of communication, of describing what that task is, how you want it back, the format that you want it back, the tone that you want it back, the order with which the priorities that this thing needs, is a skill that everyone needs to learn.
And what are the like common mistakes that companies and leaders are doing right now when they're trying to use AI?
I think a big mistake is they are AIing to AI because it's such a trend. You know, every new piece of software that comes out or a cool thing, they're thinking of ways to sew into their company. I think while that interest and that passion is good, at the same time, you still have to go back to the company's goals or that team's goals. What are you trying to do precisely? Sometimes AI might not even be the answer. If you are, I don't know, trying to create better in-person events or create more of a community with your customers, maybe AI isn't the answer. Maybe the answer is consulting with a company like TOTUS or S2G and how to tell better stories. I don't know. There's different ways to solve different problems. But I think identifying the problem or the goal of what this small team or company wants to do is something that companies are forgetting to do as the first step.
Yeah. And you said like on your talk about like the idea that maybe we will see a $1 billion company for just one person. Mm. That was just like an idea.
Yeah.
And what do you think about this? Do you think that it's possible? That's the way that we are building like the market at the moment?
Yeah. Well, I know, absolutely know that what is possible and what is already available is one person $1 million companies. There's already a lot of them. Or multi-million. We just haven't crossed that billion mark just yet. And I think that it's because of the immaturity of a lot of the tech that we have, the inability for human managers to manage agents to work together efficiently. Everyone is still trying to figure that out. I do think it's possible for a one-person billion-dollar company to come about. I think it just depends on what year that's going to be.
And what is, do you think, like, the key point to make something like this happen? What is, like, the main skill or, you know, like, the main activity that you have to try to organize things in a way that can be possible to have, like, this, all these agents and all these things working with the same vision or the same purpose?
I think what's needed is buy-in. So I also think before that day might come, there might be huge waves of protests around the world to stop that from happening. I mentioned also in my keynote, there used to be these protests from Hollywood screenwriters to protest the use of AI in creating movies. They did a walkout and a lot of actors also participated. They thought it was unfair. It was going to wipe out a lot of jobs. And it did. I think that general group of people have now accepted AI a lot more. I mean, we generally, all of us have. But I think what will stop that one-person billion-dollar company will be society, will be the masses. So how truly accepting are we of this notion of someone employing a fleet, probably an army of agents, to create this company? I mean, your customers on the other end also have to agree to that. I mean, how many times have we been called by a robo caller and just hung up, right? We have a lot of us as consumers on the consumer side have not even accepted the usage of AI in our own lives. And so all of that is part of a huge wave of change that needs to happen. In 2025, in this year alone, we're probably not there yet at all. And I think also one major point for a lot of people in the tech space to try to remember is, I mean, especially whether you're a TOTUS employee or you're a customer or you're in this space, is we're a little bit in an AI bubble ourselves. Probably if you open TikTok or Reddit or whatever social platform you use, AI news is probably all over your feed. But you curated that algorithm from your interests and the companies that you work with and all of that. There's a vast majority of people, and it is the majority of society, that do not have that at all. And so in my keynote, I also make a point of, you know, remembering those people that there's a lot of us that are living in that AI bubble, and we look at the world through our AI bubble lens, while there are hundreds of millions of people in the world that still don't really know what AI is.
And do you think, like, it's possible to design a system or policies that you can make AI and all this new technology work to make society better in a way to not leave everyone behind? Or do you think, like, that is not something that is going to happen?
I mean, we did it with the internet. So the internet was invented in 1994, 1995, and eventually a vast majority of the world is on the internet. So there's this thing called the S-curve of innovation adoption that I wrote about, where it was a study of how long it took for mass society to adopt general technological innovation. So for us to have adopted the internet, it took about 10 or so years for all of us to be brought on board. When, for instance, the first telephone came out, I mean, it's hard to think back on it now because it's just such an obvious piece of technology. But that also took some time for it to be accepted mainstream. And everything from different devices, televisions, washing machines, when those were invented, they all took time. So AI is just one of those things that will take its time. And I think eventually we will probably all get there. Especially if there's a lot of governmental policies and also companies recognizing that AI literacy is something that they have to look at more closely. It'll all quicken this acceleration or quicken this pace of change. So yes, we will definitely get there. I think the question is, what year would we get there in?
Yeah. And how can you make these policies and these agreements to, because what we can see is not just about the technology, it's about the politics and how can you rule society in a way that can organize to not be a collapse, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of people in the AI community that wants to slow it down. So even with the launch of ChatGPT, I think a couple of years ago, there was that letter that so many different, even AI researchers wanted to sign, if you remember that, for a 6-month pause on AI development. And eventually a ton of people signed it, but I don't think we paused at all. Mm. Instead, there was a lot more pressure for all of these AI companies to go faster. And the notion to them to go faster was, well, if we don't go faster, then China is going to go faster. And so we don't want to lose our first place. And so we didn't slow down, even though there were a lot of people that were brought on board to sign it. I think, you know, that's something that I think fortunately there's enough voices that are out there that are loud enough to roll out things more safely. But not everybody agrees with that. It's a warring faction between people who wants to press the pedal to the gas and go as fast as possible versus people who want to slow it down. And if we learn anything from Prisoner's Dilemma, it's that whoever presses their foot to the pedal will eventually sort of always calls the shots. And so there's always somebody trying to speed. There's always someone who is already in a Ferrari and wants everyone else to be in a Ferrari.
And it's great that you mentioned China, because, you know, like the country that is kind of becoming so popular about the use of AI and kind of gain this speed. So how do you see, like, you have all your connection with the country, and how do you see all this Chinese scene around AI? What is most interesting things that are happening, how people are using, and what do you want to share with us?
Yeah. So AI development in China is very interesting. China is very big on open source models, and they're using that as a way to influence their neighbors. So a lot of Southeast Asia, they're trying to influence them with that, other countries in North Asia. And if I have learned anything from China and working in China, is that China is very good at coordination, top-down coordination. So if something needs to happen today, it will happen. So we saw that from the wave of e-commerce that we saw, the digital transformation that a lot of companies went through, the very adaptable and quick pace of change that China has already been on. And I think with AI, I mean, already the government there is mandating all sorts of companies to use DeepSeek as the incumbent model. And so when you have government backing, it's sort of hard to shift away from that mainstream tone of what to use. And because of internal policies within the Chinese government of AI 2030, of how they want to be an AI superpower, the government is very invested in AI-ifying, if that's a word, the general population and also enterprise as well, to be the leader in AI.
Do you think like this open source model is the key for a transformation in the countries, and maybe like countries like Brazil should follow? Or what do you think about this model?
I very much believe in open source models. I think there's a level of transparency there that, if you're a developer or if you are in the more technical space, that it's sort of outputs that you can see, or that you know why that output was created. And sometimes I think with closed model companies, it's sort of blurry as to what their intentions are and what they're after. And so I absolutely vouch for open source models. It's just that because of the way that open source models are, it's a bit slower to roll out for new features, or when you are trying to it's also quite limiting. So open source models are not as readily usable or available to the general public. That's why you have such a lead with ChatGPT in that it is a closed model. It is a lot easier to use. And so there's pluses and minuses for both. But I think open source is a very important thing to remain within the AI space. And more companies should definitely invest in that.
And both China and US, where do you live right now, are countries that have been really good in teaching people to work and concepts and knowledge around technology, which in Brazil, we are kind of still working on this. You know, we have a lot to learn. So what could you share with us in Brazil? Like, how can you have more technical people? How can you teach more and have more like people convinced that can be in this environment and work on this field?
I think you have to kind of pique curiosity. That's what I try to do with my content. I try to present it in a way that's interesting, that it's funny, or that it's useful, that it's not very heavily rested in theory or definitions, but things that would appeal to the masses. I think it's very encouraging when someone comes up to me who's 70 years old and said, I just figured out how to write my email using ChatGPT, or I just downloaded it on my phone and now I'm using advanced voice mode to communicate with my grandchildren in another language. Like, I love it when someone who is not from the tech space joins in because they found it very useful for their lives. I think that's the missing link to bring the masses into this, to participate in this larger conversation. The key is to pique their interest and make it known to them that it's useful for them too. That it's not just for the, you know, my nephews and nieces who work at a tech company. So off they go and I have to go to them whenever I need my computer to be fixed, or you know, go with them with a technical question. I think more campaigns, more time and efforts, marketing efforts should be created to invite those who are outside of that tech bubble to join in.
And this process of the vibe coding that you are sharing on your talk, do you think like it's gonna be good for this process to have more people working on technology? Could you like share with us more about this vibe coding contest?
Yeah, vibe coding is where you go to a app like Bolt or Lovable, and there's a lot of them, Replit, Cursor, where you create your own app of whatever app you wanted to create. And before, it was only relegated to technical people who knew how to code, but now you can just write in normal English or Portuguese, whatever you want to make. And to not to go back to that 60-year-old example, but that 60-year-old, when I think that person looks at the world, they have a different viewpoint and lens to how things work. They have their own problems to solve. And I think the current tech products that we have, whether it's Instagram, Meta, TikTok, YouTube, they're kind of all oriented. Like the prioritization for these type of products has always been young people, Gen Z, millennials, because those were the dominant users. But I think that 60-year-old has a whole other set of problems and things that they also want to be solved. But before, they couldn't go about and solving their problem. They were waiting for these tech products to improve and eventually get to them. But now with vibe coding, there is this possibility for any 60-year-old or anybody who's just a bit older, who's more removed from the tech space, to jump in and create something that's useful for him or herself.
Oh, that's good. And you mentioned that you work a lot with e-commerce. So what do you think like the big revolution that AI can bring to e-commerce and to the retail in general?
Yeah. It's three main things, one of which is computer vision. So the ability for your stores to see things better in a more physical space. Second one is machine learning. So personalization, how personalized your service is going to be for your end customer. And then the third is generative AI. And one of the examples that I highlighted in the keynote is the usage of avatars that these live stream hosts have created for themselves in China, where there has been competitions between the human avatar live streaming versus the AI avatar live streaming. And the AI avatars actually won out or sold more than actual humans, which is kind of insane if you think about it. Those are all changes that's coming in the e-commerce space. And e-commerce is an industry that is very ripe for that type of disruption because most of its users already communicate or interact with them online.
And what do you think are the other industries that are more like embrace this revolution and...
Healthcare, legal is probably two very traditional industries, at least in the US. They're pretty archaic, and the partners that work in the law firms, I mean, some of them still write notes by hand and with a pen and pen, like a pad. Doctors also are not the most tech savvy people there is. They're specialists in medicine, and they went very deep in that route. And so both of those characters are quite removed from everything that's happening in the tech space. So in the US, you already have companies that's going directly into those type of companies and changing the workflow or the way that they work. But really, AI is, I think, relevant for all sorts of industries. Anytime you're doing work in a computer, it would be relevant for you. And I think all sorts of industries, from finance to professional services to healthcare to legal, we touch our computer so much. And so it's all going to be affected. Maybe the sector that's lesser affected is things to do with physical spaces. So potentially like mining is one of the ones that are less affected. Food industries might be a little less affected if you're farming or growing something. Although, I mean, there's also a lot of innovations in agriculture as well, and a more perfect way to measure your crop yield and prediction on prices and things like that. So maybe there is no 100% protected industry that AI won't eat at. It's all pretty fair game for disruption.
And all the time when you have like this change on technology, we are also change the culture and how people behave, isn't it? And how do you see like the consumer's behavior, how they are changing with all this process, or how they will change soon with all this wave of AI?
Yeah. We used to think that consumers, when they see a piece of, so there's this word called AI slop, right? It's when we are all using AI to generate our LinkedIn posts, our TikTok videos, our footage of any sort. It all starts to look the same, and it all starts to look like something that AI developed. And I think we're entering that era where it's very easy for a consumer to tell if something was AI generated. And I think within the consumer space, there's also two camps of people, where one camp of people don't really mind it as long as the story still seeps through from a certain brand. There's another more old school, more traditional group of consumers who just absolutely will reject it. So I know people who are like, they will unfollow someone or they will hide or block that post if they know it was AI generated. So there's different demographics from the consumer side. Some are more accepting, some are less accepting. But I think the general trend is more and more people are accepting of it. Because I remember in 2022, when these AI generated commercials would come about, people were anytime a brand came out with an AI generated commercial, consumers would be like, oh, like they're using AI to create that thing again. And there was an ick to it. Whereas now, if you fast forward to 2025, it's so common and all around us that the general trend is that a lot of consumers are accepting of it because they are probably doing it too. And I think that is the gradual change that has happened throughout these years, where, you know, before we would really reject also Instagram influencers that were completely AI generated, but now we follow a lot of them. I think Lil Miquela, I think she's Brazilian. She has millions of followers and she is AI generated. And she works with all sorts of brands to sell their products. And she garners a lot of attention on Instagram. And people buy things because of her. And she's an AI avatar.
And what else do you think like can be next trends or think that you can give us an advice to people paying attention and to follow as a trend? Or what is next? What is coming?
The big thing is agents. I would follow in that agent space. So I demoed something called the AI Agent Village in my keynote where I showed these four different agents working together. I think that's a slice of the future of work where in the future, you're going to give commands to these agents and your job is to watch over them and make sure that they're doing things that they are supposed to do. So it's kind of like being a babysitter or a mom and you're momming this group of digital workers that are genderless, ageless, that will work forever, work 24/7. And that's the new paradigm.
And are they can be able to do everything? Or because my concern is a lot of like the content that we are using for the AI and for the things that we are following and using is like content that are produced in the past. So how can we make like new ideas and guarantee that we are not just scaling and being more productive using all this idea of AI agents?
The things that are trained on in the past, they are... I mean, you can always prompt them or in your instruction to them, you can tell them to be more creative. There's something called changing the temperature in prompts. So a temperature of zero, do I have it in reverse? A temperature of zero is where you are sticking to the absolute fact and a temperature of one is when you want it to be highly, highly creative. So even when we are prompting into a ChatGPT and say, for instance, you want their output to be a little less patternized, a little less generic. You literally can input in your prompt a temperature of a certain number, and that will shift the output that it gives back to you. So the answer it gives back to you will be a little more random, a little bit more creative. And so you can use that hack to tune different outputs. So obviously use it or obviously don't use it when, you know, your boss has asked you something and you have to give something that's very factual. It's very accurate and precise. You know, don't play with that. But if you're given a task where maybe you're in marketing or maybe you're doing some sort of creative product and you have to write something or create up with some sort of story or you're ideating, you can sort of let it loose and tune it so that it's giving you back something a lot more original.
And you can make connections that are not like obvious or the same result that the others are having. That's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the real revolution, I guess. Yeah. And there is something as a final comment that you would like to share with our audience, something that you learned in Brazil, your impression of the country. It's not your first time, you said before, but is there something that you learned with us or here or in the conference that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think it's my third time in Brazil. And every time I come, I'm incredibly humbled by the passion that people hear. I mean, Brazilians, it's sort of known all around the world that Brazilians are very passionate. And when they are hooked onto a topic, they will stop at nothing to sort of get to the end. With a lot of the DMs that I've got after getting off stage, it has already been like the question is this long. because they are very interested in a specific topic and they're just very curious. And I think that's a great trait to have. It's probably one of the best traits to have going forward, is to be very curious about what's happening in the AI space, because that's going to fuel a lot of your natural, it's not like people telling you to do something and then you going to do it. It's you're naturally driven. You will drive yourself to innovate and try new things and experiment. And not all countries have that.
Well, that's good to know. So thank you very much. It was really nice to have you here, Sharon. Thank you for your participation on the conference and here in the podcast. So thank you.
Thank you so much for obrigado.
E você que ficou até aqui, não deixa de compartilhar, de curtir o podcast A Tots nas redes e ouvir os episódios anteriores que estão todos em podcast.tots.co. Eu fico por aqui, até a próxima. Tchau, tchau.